Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So, hey, look, this is live and this stuff happens. And, I can apologize all day for it. But, the reality is that what makes us as human beings is how we deal with adversity. This is adversity, folks. These are the things that make you who you are, and how you're going to react to them is your character. So let me be really clear in saying a few things. Number one, anchor your listening. It's so critical when you're listening to podcasts or movies or conversations with anybody, you got to find that place to anchor your listening. And today is about leadership. And I believe every single person on this planet is a leader. If you do something in service of yourself or even somebody else, you're exhibiting leadership skills. To me, I believe leadership is not about a status or a title. Leadership is about a way of being. It's something you possess, you embody, and you bring out or bring forth into the world. And today, if you are tuning in, and I hope you are from wherever you are around the world, listen as a leader. What we're going to talk about is going to transcend and really speak to what's possible as a leader, and really, honestly, for you. So you may remember my first guest. He was supposed to be on the show the first time, and we had some technical difficulties. And I won't lie, I was actually concerned just now with no volume that we were going to have the same issue. But for those of you that don't know my next guest, Dov Barron is, he's been called a lot of things, all good. International best speaker, author, podcast, number one podcast for Fortune 500 companies. But he is also a very close friend, somebody I respect to a degree that it's rare. And he is a coach, he is a brother, and he is somebody who I believe embodies what being a servant leader truly is. He is the closest thing that I know and that I see to that. And so without further ado, I want to bring on Dov to the show. And Dov, you're live. Welcome. Say hi to the world. It's amazing and great, as always, to talk to you and talk to you here. How are you?
Thanks, mate. I'm grateful to be here. I'm honored to be here. And I'm glad we got through the technical challenges. As you're right, the first time it didn't work. And then we're back. Dov? Like, oh, my God.
How is this? How am I not able to hear you right now?
I don't know. My mic is on. Can you hear me? My mic is on.
I cannot hear you, Dov.
You've turned me off now.
Can you hear me? How is this possible? Only on a live show, folks. So I can't hear you. You can hear me. So you know what we're going to do? This is unheard of. I'm going to call you on your cell phone.
Okay.
And put you on speakerphone so I can hear you.
You've reached the personal voicemail.
Well, they hear you. I can't hear you.
Okay.
That's great. But I need to hear you. So call me on your cell phone, please, Dov, so we can have this conversation. I love it. No matter what, we are going to have this meeting. We are going to have this conversation. Call me. All right. I can hear you.
Fantastic.
This is hilarious, right? Okay. Well, the good thing is that the world can hear you. So, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, mate. Yes, we've had some technical challenges in the past, but it's going to work out. It's fine. We're going to do this. As you said, it's part of what being a leader is. Being a leader is facing the adversity in front of you and deciding that something is more important than the adversity. And that's what we're doing here. We'll find a way out. We'll climb over the adversity and make it happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm really excited because we're going to talk about something that I know a lot of people have been writing to me saying, what is this? What is a dragon leader? So I think probably the best place to start is really just explaining to people what exactly is a dragon leader? and let the world know what that is.
So the first thing I would say to everybody is this. Can you remember a time when you felt like you had a fire in your belly? You had that experience where something burns deep within you, and you know that that's there. That fire is what I call your dragon fire. It's always been there. It is innate within you. However, we dampen that fire. We allow others to dampen that fire. So you probably had the experience where you've been on fire about something. You've done everything you can. You've gone for it. You put all your fire into it. And then you've got there, and it's been an anticlimax. Everybody had that experience? Yes. So what happened is you used your fire to get you through, and you've not allowed, there's been nothing left in which to imbue what it is that you're doing. So the interesting thing about it is that the dragon fire is within us all. It's always been there. But our willpower is different than our dragon fire. And so what happens is we overshadow, we dampen our fire by using our willpower. Willpower is here. Fire is here. It's in the heart and in the soul, in the belly. And so you can get there with willpower, of course, but it won't sustain you. And the problem with it is when you get to it, whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, it will likely become an anticlimax.
So can you say a little bit more about the head and the heart?
So I like to separate all of the three. So you've got head, heart, and soul. So head, we all understand. That's logical, rational. This makes sense logically and rationally. And the challenge with that is that if you think about it, everybody, you know, we've all met people, we've all been people who said, well, I'm very logical about this. I like to be logical about this. The truth of the matter is that's a lie. Human beings are not logical or rational. We make all of our decisions emotionally first. Even the most logical decision you make has an emotional base. All your bias is emotionally based. The way you look at anything is from an emotional place first. However, we like to think we're doing things and we like to rationalize. Let's think about that word, rationalize. We like to rationalize things in order to tell ourselves that this is okay and justify it. So that's the head. Then there's the heart, which can be overwhelmingly emotional, and we can get carried away and we lose all sense of logic and we lose all sense of what's right and wrong. And we do things that are like, oh my, like when we look back, we go, that was so out of character for me. And I can't believe I did that. And that's emotion. So if you run your life through your head, that would be terrible because you'd be emotionally void. If you ran your head through your life through your heart, and I've done both of these very well, meaning badly, from your heart, then you're just an emotional spinning top. You're bouncing from one thing to the next. And then you have your soul. And when I talk about soul, this is not a religious thing. It's innately the truth of who you are at a primary driver level. What is it within you that brings you to the world? What is it you're here to serve, by which you use your head and your heart as directors? But the guidance system is the soul. That's your dragon fire. What is the dragon fire in there? Who and what is it you're here to serve? What is it you are willing to, what is the hill you're willing to die on? See, dragons, I use the term dragons because if you think about it, dragons, if we look at mythology, think about this. Human beings are driven by stories. We're driven by mythology. And this is really enhancing and bringing all that power together. Because when you think about it, dragons have always had a bad rap. They're the bad. But think about this. Dragons don't fly in big flocks. They're usually alone or in very small groups, and they are protectors. They are there to serve something much bigger, much greater, much more powerful than themselves. That's what a dragon leader is. We're there to serve, we're willing to fight for it, and it's something that sets us on fire even when we've got nothing left. We will fly into that situation and we will deal with it as needs to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Come hell or high water.
Wow. So you may want to mute me when I'm talking to you. So you can hear me, right?
Sure.
Okay. So mute me on your phone.
Let's do this. I can't mute you without muting me, I don't think.
No. Oh, okay. So here's the thing that's very interesting to me is that dragons are being mythological, creatures, right? Mm-hmm. So what's interesting is that around the mythology of dragons, we talk about dragons like they exist. And I don't know, maybe in some other time in the world, maybe they did, right? But they don't, or at least nowadays they don't. And I never really thought about, Jill, just you said it just now, that dragons don't fly in flocks. They don't, right? In every movie, every Harry Potter, every How to Tame a Dragon, whatever it is, like, I guess for the most part, right, they are singular in nature. Yeah. And they also are protectors, which is something that I also never really thought about before, which is interesting. And so as a leader, right, you've got the fire in the belly. You are serving and protecting something or someone greater than yourself, which I think is a great kind of connection point for people who are listening. It's just, again, I always find it fascinating how you can find something, Dov, and bring it into the world of leadership. So that explains what maybe a dragon leader is. One of the things that we talked about, before was how the pursuit of happiness is making you miserable. Now I could talk about this probably for a long time, but sure. Tell the listeners, right? What do you mean by this and why should they care?
So let's just understand this, and it'll lead us into another part of this conversation in a moment. But just to start here, let's just grasp this. You are out in the world. I understand it. I am too. We're out in the world to pursue success. Okay? So why do we want success? Well, because probably those who came before us told us you should have more success than we did. That's usually mom and dad or whoever it is. And so we go, okay, I want more success. That's over here. Now, if I get more success, what will I get? Well, I get more comfort. And that's what we say, right? We want to be happy and comfortable. But happiness, and this is for everybody to understand, happiness is transitory. It's transitory. It passes. If I come and tickle you, you'll laugh. When I stop, you will stop laughing. Right. So happiness is transitory. Joy is not. So what happens is when the happiness stops, we end up feeling very sad. We feel like there's something wrong with us. We're like, well, how come I'm not happy all the time? The pursuit of happiness is actually a path to misery, because otherwise you end up being a bloody clown. So it's not about that. It's not about happiness. It's about joy. And joy can be found in all situations. Joy can be found at the foot of a bed saying goodbye to somebody you love as they pass. It's a deeply sad moment, but it's also joyous. Joy can be found in that moment of birth, which is tearing a body apart to bring another body into the world, and yet there's pure joy. That's not happiness. That's joy. Happiness is, I just won a ticket. Happiness is, I tickled you. Happiness is, you said something good to me. They're all externally stimulated. Joy is internally stimulated. So if you're pursuing happiness, you're guaranteeing your path to misery.
It's interesting. So do you need one to have the other? Is one a precursor?
No.
And would you say people should strive more for joy than happiness? I mean, I'm not trying to delineate the two, right?
You should delineate the two. I have no problem with that. That's fine. Okay. I think that we definitely should be pursuing joy, not happiness. Happiness. So here's back to psychology, which you know is my background. Just back to simple psychology. Let's just start here. So in a simple psychology level, let's think of it this way. Every human being is trying to feel better.
Yeah.
It's not my opinion, that's psychology. We're all trying to feel better. We look down on those who are doing it differently than us, and we say, oh, that low life over there is using heroin in the back alley. They're just trying to feel better. And actually, they're no better or worse than the person who's volunteering at the church 7 days a week. They're all just trying to feel better. We all have our poop. And when we're trying to deal with that poop, we're trying to feel better in order to ease our pain.
Sure.
And the challenge with that is if we try to ease our pain by trying to do happy or be happy, put on the plastic smile, then we repress.
Yeah.
We have to repress everything else. And truly, the masters of life do not repress. So let me just help you understand the order. If you repress, repression creates depression. If you meet somebody who's depressed, it's because their feelings are repressed.
Mm.
Okay, so they repress their feelings and they get depression. If they continue to repress even their depression, then they become oppressors. They oppress others. They hold other people down. However, if you're willing to be with whatever is coming up, you can actually find joy in it. You can find joy in the insights, in the clarity, in the even in the pain of whatever it is. So joy and happiness are vastly different in that, in what it is we're pursuing. Happiness, think of it this way. Happiness is external. It's some external stimuli. And joy is internal. It's a choice I make, and it's a willingness to find the joy in it. And it's not some woo-woo mindset crap.
No.
Like where people are going, oh, you know, just find the lesson in it. Piss off. Like, come on. I mean, you know, people said to me, you know, when I fell off the mountain, I got smashed up. People said to me, oh, you know, it's a life lesson. Piss off. It might be a life lesson, but at this moment, it feels like hell. And it was hell. Now, is it a life lesson? Of course it is. But we have to deal with the reality of something as well as the greater understanding of it.
Yeah, no, I love that you just framed it up, the joy versus the happiness piece. I think that so many people are chasing happiness to the detriment of their own emotional psyche, right? To their own emotional detriment, really.
You know, you just said something really important there, because that is something I talk about a lot, and you've heard me, you and I have had conversations about this. The difference between emotional intelligence and emotional maturity.
Correct.
All kinds of people have read Daniel Goleman's book, and they've read all the things about emotional intelligence. They think they're emotionally intelligent, but they have zero emotional maturity. Emotional maturity has got nothing to do with chronology. It's not how old you are. It's the willingness to stop pursuing happiness and be willing to be mature enough to be with whatever's going on, even if that's a kick in the hoo-has at that moment. Yeah. It's just to be with it.
I think you just brought up a topic that is so unbelievably important that I hope people really get the difference between emotional intelligence and emotional maturity. It, oftentimes to me, it's like the difference between being intelligent and being wise, right? There are tons of people out there that are book smart, but excuse me, don't know how to drive a car, can't tie their shoe, don't know how to turn on a computer. And then there are people who have never gone to college or school, and they could take apart a computer and figure out how to drive a car within a second, right? And I think that there, it comes down to being present and having these life experiences, which then taking in the lesson, right? Creating the joy and actually building on that maturity. I think we live in a world right now where so many people are so quick to be mature at things that they're not giving themselves the time to actually process what they need to actually gain that level of maturity. I think this topic
that comes from that fire. This is why I'm not really understand that. That comes from that fire that we allow people to dampen and we dampen in ourselves. But that fire is where it comes from. That is the fire that will fuel you through anything. And we dampen our fire. We spend money on trying to be happy. We buy a nice car. We buy a nice house. And then you meet somebody like Dove, and Dove talks about finding your fire. And we go, oh, well, I can't afford that. Oh, really? So you can afford all the things that you spent 150 grand on this year to be happy that didn't last. And it didn't last, so you bought another one because you hoped that one would work, and it didn't work. But you're not willing to invest in your own fire. You're not willing to invest in fueling that fire, in burning away the illusion so that you can be a dragon leader. No, you're not willing to go, okay, that's cool. That's why I can only work with 6 to 8 people a year, because you don't have what it takes. And it's fine. I have no judgment on you. You can be whatever you want. But don't tell me you want to be a dragon and then say, well, but I've just got to go buy a new Audi.
Yeah. Listen, as a coach, I hear this all the time. And this is something you and I have talked about a lot, which is the selectiveness in who we will work with as it relates to their level of commitment, or in this case, their level of fire, right? And just as there's a therapist and a sports coach, and there's a doctor, and there's everything for everybody else, find that person for you, right? Based on the fire in your belly. So the next thing I want to talk about that we had talked about earlier is about why comfort is the enemy of truth. Now, I really want people to hear this because there's just layers to this conversation, but I know you'll break it down very simple. So,
I talked about over here, we're pursuing success, and why we want success so that we can be more comfortable than mom and dad or whoever it was. Okay. So the cycle goes success to comfort. Okay. So I've got more success and now I've got more comfort. All right. That's good. But it seems meaningless. I'm not feeling fulfilled. There's something missing. Oh, obviously what I need is more success. So
right.
You pursue a higher level of success so you can have a higher level of comfort. And oh, well, now I've got a boat and I've got a house and I've got a Rolls Royce or whatever it is, but it still feels kind of empty. Well, I need more success. And that cycle continues on and on and on and on. It just keeps going.
Yeah.
And because in order for that cycle to keep going, you have to believe a lie. And the question where people turn their back on their fire is they're not willing to ask the question, what am I not willing to look at? What am I not willing to examine? You cannot find the truth in comfort. Comfort is the enemy of truth. However, yeah. And this is important, if the cycle is success, comfort, and down here, meaningless, if you stay in the meaningless, which most people don't, oh my God, this is too uncomfortable, let's get more success. If you stay here, you move into something called pain plus curiosity. And pain plus curiosity leads you to truth because you are no longer willing to believe the lie. Comfort is the enemy of truth. There is no truth to be discovered in comfort.
So let's break this down. I want to unpack this because there's, like I said, I understand what you're saying. There's a lot of layers to this.
Absolutely.
I think in the most basic form, we always talk about comfort zone, nothing grows there, so on and so forth.
Sure.
You know, complacency is the root of, I think, of where things go to die, right? Like, we all know that when we hide out in what's comfortable, because it's comfortable, right? We're not really growing. We're not expanding. We're not challenging ourselves. And I remember a conversation you and I had once, and I'm not going to dive into the whole conversation, but you basically just called me out and said, what are you getting out of playing it safe right now? And I remember saying, like, what do you mean? And you're like, you're like wrapping yourself up in this blanket of some conversation that's keeping you from being your greatest self, right? Being at your biggest, best potential. And I think what I want listeners to really get is that being comfortable is normal, but it doesn't have to be something that happens all the time, right? There's a time and place for comfort. That could look like your bed. It could look like a prayer. It could look like meditation. It could look like a lot of things. But when it comes to the fire in your belly as a leader, going after the things that you say you want, right? You said earlier on, you know, hey, I want this, but I'm going to go get that, right? I think it's really important that people understand you're going to have moments of comfort, okay? But don't set up shop there forever because that's not going to help you. Here's one thing, though, I would like to ask you for people listening. And the question really is, so what if people recognize, hey, I'm living too comfortably, so to speak. What can I do to force, as a forcing function, to nudge me, to help me move out of that so I can face the truth? What do you have for people around that?
Well, I'm going to give you a very unpopular answer, but it is the truth. Human beings are motivated by two primary forces, pleasure and pain. Pleasure moves us short term. Pain moves us long term. It's not my opinion. That's psychology. That's how it works. Pleasure moves us short term. Pain moves us long term. The problem is the further we get away from the pain, the less we are motivated and driven. So when you get comfortable, and you know, I'm not saying you should be uncomfortable all the time.
Sure.
But there is an evolution. And if you're not evolving, you are dying. That's the bottom line of it. If you're not evolving, you're dying. So this is really important. So when I look at my marriage, I am very happily married. I adore my bride. I'm grateful for her every day.
Right.
But let me be clear. I use pain to motivate me.
Yeah.
Because I understand how to work that. And here's how it is. I'll tell you, this is just me being completely transparent. My wife and I have an agreement, and our agreement is this. Divorce is always an option.
Yeah.
That's pain. Divorce is always an option. And people go, really? I would never have thought that about you two. You two seem so happy. And I go, no, you don't understand. We're happy in our relationship. There's joy in our relationship because divorce is always an option. Every single day, I know my wife can walk away and say, screw you, I've had enough. And that keeps me aware and keeps me from getting complacent in my relationship. Because at any point in time, if I don't treat her the way she deserves, she can go somewhere else and get what she deserves. Now, here's what's interesting. She runs the same thing about me. Now, that has us both show up in the relationship with a ton of love. So I've never had a meal in 22 years from my wife that I haven't said thank you for. Not because of obligation, but because I don't expect it.
Yeah.
You go, well, surely you expect you always get it. No, I don't expect it. Because expectation would be comfort. I'm in appreciation, and I live in that appreciation. People talk about gratitude. It's nothing more than blah from people. They're just puking out, I'm so grateful for this. Shut up. I want to hit you with a hose. It's not about that. It's about being present with it and understanding that anything, this is from my Buddhist background, that anything is transitory. Anything can go away. So so it's not the discomfort, but it's the willingness to be present with and understanding that it will go, that keeps me on fire. It keeps me connected to my fire.
So, you know me well. People listening, you know, some people know me listening out there, know me better than others, but, you know, I'm a deeply committed husband and father. And there's not a moment that goes by where I am not present to the fact that, unbeknownst to me, things can change.
Mm-hmm.
Life is not guaranteed. And so you talk about pain, or you talk about, you know, that thing that keeps you present, right? And I'm very aware that of what that pain is, what that presence is, the invitation. And something else you said is not taking things for granted. You know, I think we're living in a world where people oftentimes feel obligated, or they feel that they deserve something where they haven't worked for it. And a lot of people want to do gratitude. They want to do mindfulness. They want to do authenticity. They want to do leadership. And people are smarter than that. They are. And if to live a real intimate existence with another human being, you have to embrace the pain, as you said. You have to recognize that and value the other person, right? As a leader, you have to value the people that you lead. And we talk about this all the time, you know, that have compassion and humility and connection. But we're really talking about understanding the pain and having the fire in your belly. One of the things that you talked also about, I want to get through this because there's a lot here, is why conflict is your friend. So a lot of people are conflict averse, right? The first sign of conflict, and they're running for the hills. So why should conflict be your friend?
It's a great question. So conflict. So let me be clear. I don't like conflict.
I know.
Anybody else.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to do it.
Right.
That's the distinction. I don't particularly like it, but I'm willing to do it. Right. So what do I mean about conflict is your friend is simply this. I want you to think about your best friend. If you have a genuine best friend, I promise you, you have had some serious conflict with that person. I can think of my best friends, and there's been a couple of times with my best friends where we've come close to fisticuffs, like we've been so pissed at each other. And it's usually about how that person is, we're committed to that person being at their best. Yeah. And we're seeing them behave in a way that's not appropriate to who they claim they are, and we will call them out on it. The wonderful thing about conflict is if you understand how to have healthy conflict, we're not talking about screaming and shouting and being a lunatic. Healthy conflict is in the process of conflict, I understand you better. I understand your values better. I have
a deep
level of compassion and empathy for you.
Just say that piece again, because people talk about healthy conflict all the time, and I don't think they explain or express it in the way you just said it. Please, I think it's really, really important. You summarized it well.
So unhealthy conflict is I'm right, you're wrong. That's it. Right. That's unhealthy conflict. So healthy conflict gives me a way to understand you at a deeper level. It gives me a way to have compassion for you at a deeper level. It gives me a way to have an insight into your value system, what it is that drives you. That is healthy conflict. So I'm asked all the time, as you know, Joshua, I spoke at the UN several years ago, and we were asked about the rise of the neo-Nazis and all this, and how do we deal with this? And the bottom line is, it's not through going out and parading and wearing Antifa masks or doing any of that crazy stuff. It's be curious, be willing to have an argument, not for winning's sake, but for understanding's sake. Do you get that? I'm willing to argue with you for the purpose of understanding, not for the purpose of beating.
Yeah, I totally get it. I think the challenge for many is that we live in such a divisive time, and it feels like the world is being pitted against itself in many ways right now.
See, I used to think that, but I disagree. We're told that that's the way it is. I used this example last night with somebody I was on a conversation with. You know who AOC is, right?
Yeah, of course.
What you do, right? And you know who Ted Cruz is, right?
Of course.
Right. So we all know those. And you can't think of two more polar people inside of politics. Yeah. You know they just passed a bill together?
I do.
Most people don't know that. So hold on a sec.
No, to your point, right?
These two people are absolutely against each other. Yes, but they can find common ground. And if they can, we can all.
I agree 100%. I think that we are told certain things to believe and propagate, right? I totally get that. What I meant is that there is an uprise in debates or divisiveness around certain cultures and ethnicities that I'm not saying weren't there before. They're rising to the surface now. And there's healthy conflict, right? There's people that are conducting themselves in ways where they can put their biases aside and say, what is the common goal or the common ground, right?
Yeah,
100%.
Conflict is your greatest asset. Yeah. So I work with leaders and I work with Dragon leaders, whether it's as a corporation or as a company, as an executive team or as a CEO, as a high-level entrepreneur, as an athlete or an entertainer, it doesn't matter. What I've trained them to do is to have healthy conflict, because in healthy conflict, I will grow.
Yeah,
I will have to breach my own bias. I will have to get past my own bias. And that's vitally important for all of us.
No, I embrace and welcome conflict.
Of course you do, you're New Yorker.
It's kind of my religion, I guess, conflict, right? Everywhere you go and everybody's got an opinion. And I think if you have an opinion, and I believe everybody does, then you have to be able to support it and have a conversation and be responsible and engage, right? You got to engage. And when you engage with somebody, there could be conflict, but conflict could be a moment in time or it could be a lifetime, right? It really just depends on how we interpret that moment and how we show up. We could talk about this.
Before you have to go on for a minute, because I know you want to do this.
Yeah.
But in the context of finding your dragon fire,
yeah,
what most of us do in the context of conflict is we throw a wet blanket on our own fire because we don't want to offend. We don't want to offend other people, and that will always dampen your fire. And you've got to embrace that fire. And that doesn't mean you've got to burn down anybody's house, but you've got to be willing to stoke your own fire. And in the process, and this is what dragon leaders do, as a dragon leader, my job is to ignite your fire. It's not to put your fire out. And the problem with leadership as it was is, I'm of the dragon, I'm got the fire, I'm going to put yours out. No. I'm going to ignite your fire. That's my job.
I love how you just you kind of light up when you said that. So there's a couple more points I want to get to. I think it's really critical. The next one was why most people will never become dragon leaders. Now, I think we're kind of touching on this as we talk. I mean, It takes a level of vulnerability, curiosity, a level, I mean, just those two in general, I think you really need to step into something bigger, right? Something unknown that lights you up, no pun intended. And I'll be the first to admit it's scary, you know, but fear can be the best motivator. It doesn't have to be something that derails you. So maybe share a little bit more about, you know, in your own opinion and experience, why most people won't become dragon leaders.
So there's an actual cycle to it. And if you think about this, human beings are driven by story. It's not my opinion. Again, we know this about us. And stories are so good that they've been around longer than writing, right? And we live, everything we're doing in our life is via a story or a mythology. And what we really need to understand is that the question is, whose story are you living by? Whose right. mythology are you living by? And so what happens is, if you're living by a collective story that's not yours, then you become afraid of stepping outside of that story. And so you dampen your own fire in order to buy the story of the group. And as I said, dragons fly either alone or in a very small group. So yeah. I get that it can be scary, but owning that is so powerful yeah. in where you move forward to. So what I just want to say here is for people to just stop for a minute and ask yourself, what is it that I silence myself on? Wow. What is it that I'm afraid to speak out about? Most people will never become dragon leaders because they're afraid of hurting or offending others. But here's what I want you to understand. Mother Teresa was a dragon. Martin Luther King was a dragon. Nelson Mandela was a dragon. Yeah. These are dragon leaders. They don't always look like, you know, scary. Mother Teresa didn't look like that, but she was a dragon. She stood in the face of Rosa Parks was a dragon. Sure. You stand in the face of the conflict. You stand in the face of the bias, and you own your story, yours, your mythology. That is, but most people will not do that because they're afraid to offend. So they dampen their own fire. And the problem with that is you, and this is what you said right at the beginning, Josh, you are a leader. Listen to me here as I'm saying this. You are a leader. You go, but I'm not a CEO. I don't care. It doesn't matter. You're a leader. How do I know? Do you have a friend? Yes, you're a leader. Do you have a child? Yes, you're a leader. Do you have grandchildren? Yes, you're a leader. Do you have a partner in life? Yes, you're a leader. You lead by example. And if you want to lead with some wimpy ass version of leading, then you can do that. Yeah. But that's a terrible legacy. Don't put out your fire. Use your fire to set others on fire. Use your fire to ignite others so they can come forward and make the difference in the world they need to make. But most people won't do that because they're clinging to comfort. And the longer you cling to comfort, the longer you hold on to the lies. There is no truth in comfort. Comfort is your enemy. It doesn't mean you can't be comfortable, but if you cling to comfort, you will never find truth. And if you never find truth, you will never be in touch with your fire. And if you want to have a legacy and you want to shift the world, you have to go to the fire. But when you step into the fire, you fear you will be burned up and evaporated. And here's the truth. You will.
Yeah.
Will be burned up in the form that you know yourself. But what will emerge is a dragon.
Yep. Wow. I feel like I should just end it right there, because I mean, the transformation that one needs to go through, right? It's different for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think owning your story is something for myself, it's taken me 45 years, right? And it's something I continue to work on every day. And every day there's a new page written in my book. And I can tell you from my own experience, owning my story and different chapters of it has been some of the most challenging moments in my life, right? I get it. People don't want to talk about the bad stuff. They're embarrassed. They have egos. They're afraid of what people are going to think. And all I can share to people who are listening is that you should not be ashamed of who you are. You should not be ashamed of what you've accomplished or what you're working on or what you're working towards or who you love or how you love. This is part of owning your story. This is part of owning your truth. Not everyone's going to love it. Not everyone's going to understand it, accept it, but you have to accept it, right? You have to accept your own story first. You can't sell your story to somebody else if you don't buy into it. That is BS, right?
Well, that's what we do all the time in leadership, don't we, Josh? I mean, you and I talk about this in our own private conversations. Everybody's telling a bunch of crap that they don't believe in themselves.
I know. But there are people out there that buy into it. And what I want people who are listening to understand and listening to you is that everybody can or has the potential to step into the fire, own your story, embrace and recognize the discomfort and the pain, but recognize also that what's on the other side of this is transformation in a way that most people have never experienced, right? Most people, ironically, we talk about fire. Most people will walk on coals, right? And say, I'm transformed. No, you're not. We all know that that has nothing to do with it. They'll watch a TED talk. They'll sit through a movie. They'll read a book. They'll listen to a podcast. That may be the equivalent of lighting the match, but that's not stepping into the fire, right? We're talking about something bigger. I want to ask you, there's something you had said to me about life in the soup. And yeah. I think that just that title alone for me, it conjures up just growing up in New York City. But what does life in the soup mean for people who are listening?
So let me ask you, what is a butterfly before it's a butterfly?
Are you asking me?
Sure.
It's what is it? A little, you know, little centipede, worm, whatever you call it.
Caterpillar?
Caterpillar, yeah. I'm just thinking of something with a lot of legs. Yeah. Right.
And that's what most people say. That's not true, though.
Okay.
That's what most people will say. There are three stages. So there's caterpillar, pupilla, yeah, which is where it's in the casing, and then it's a butterfly.
Right.
Right? So what happens is, this is really interesting. What happens is, when it's time, the caterpillar spins silk around itself all the way around, apart from, like, right up to the top of its head. It spins that. Eventually, the head, now listen to this. This is important for all of you. When it's ready, the head falls off. And then shortly thereafter, the butterfly emerges.
Right.
Very important, because we were talking about head, heart, and soul. Okay?
Yeah.
The head has to fall off before the butterfly can emerge. So when it's in that casing, what is it? When it's in that casing, it is soup. If you took a scalpel and you opened it up, it would just look like gooey soup in there. This is what most people can't bear. When I work with a leader, it's always the most difficult part, because when they are a caterpillar, even though they know they're not caterpillars, and they're maybe the king caterpillar because they're the CEO of the world, whatever it is, that when they're in that space, it's pretty great because they can take action. They can move from space to space, and it's pretty awesome. And they look at the butterflies and they go, I want to be a butterfly because then I can fly great distances. But in order to become a butterfly, you have to stay in the soup. You have to stay in that pupilla state. And in that state, you cannot move. You have to be with. And A-type personalities, who are a lot of my clients, are like, well, hold on a second. I don't know how to do that. I know. That is where the transformation, that's where the fire melts you. Because if you open it up, there is no caterpillar in there and there is no butterfly in there. It actually is a different animal, but it actually, the DNA transforms inside that casing. The only thing is that with my clients, you don't emerge as a butterfly, you emerge as a dragon. Wow. You come out as a dragon. And you're not meant to be with the butterflies, and you were never meant to be with the caterpillars. But here's the thing I want you to get. Dragons are never born in their own environment. Dragon, think about this mystical creature. When they're born, they're little and they're tiny and they're cute and they're malleable. So dragons are sometimes, just to use the metaphor, dragons are sometimes born in caves with bears. And when they're born in a cave with a bear, they grow fur. When they're born around eagles, they grow feathers. When they're born around sharks, they grow fins. But they're always a dragon, but they learn to morph into whatever it is. The problem is that the longer they stay morphed, the longer it is, they believe that they are whatever they are surrounded by. I was born in a ghetto of poverty and all those kinds of things. And for a while, I believed that that's who I was. But I always knew, from being 7 years old, I had my first experience of my own fire. And I knew that that was my truth. And I had to battle with that until eventually I had to leave the country I was born in. I had to travel the world and find places that would touch that fire and bring it forward to me. And that fire did not get fully ignited until I fell off a mountain and got smashed to pieces. We have to find ways to tap back into the fire and stop believing the mythology of who we are and believe the truth of who we are.
Well, I also think, and that goes back to the comfort piece, right? If we live in the comfort, we're never going to find the fire. It's just that simple. There's one last piece I want to talk about before we wrap up, which is you had said something to the extent that you're either committed to making a difference or you're committed to having everyone like you. And, you know, I think this is something that I speak to often, you know, which is do you want to be liked or do you want to be understood? Right. And the sense that the contrast there is that a lot of people, again, to your earlier point about being afraid to speak up, speak their truth, to own their story in service of just wanting, you know, vanity, you know, acknowledgement or whatever that may look like. And I think if you could just expand a little bit on this. I think it's really important. Then we can wrap up.
Sure. Well, some of you watching, listening, paying attention here today are familiar with a friend of mine who is a speaker. His name is Larry Winger. He's known as the Pit Bull of Personal Development. And Larry says if he doesn't get at least two death threats a week, he's become insignificant. He's become irrelevant. And I love that about Larry because he's committed to making a difference. He's not committed to being liked. So there are people who love him and there are people who don't love him at all. And that's okay. He's not here to please everybody. And so here's the thing. You either make the commitment to be liked by everybody, which means you paste on a plastic smile and you become the freaking joker.
Yeah.
Or you make a commitment to serving in the world. Now, that doesn't mean you become an a-hole, but you decide that you're going to serve in the world in spite of those who won't like you for it. I understand that. I'll give you this example. I wrote about this recently. I remember walking into an event and hearing about this guy who was a publisher who was turning the publishing world on his head. And I was really impressed by what he'd done, really impressed. So I was really excited to meet with him. And I actually ended up at dinner with him and sat with him. And I could feel this guy pulling away from me. I mean, I was just having a normal conversation. I wasn't saying anything that was in any way. He was just pulling away from me. I was like, oh, that's really interesting. So what I was saying is that, you know, that my friend had said, well, this guy is he's a perpetual nice guy. And I said, but he's making such disruptions in his industry. And he goes, yeah, but in personal life, he's disrupted. He's not disrupting. He's very nice. And you would have offended him by your very presence of being willing to step up and say whatever it is you feel or think. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And it was really fascinating for me. And this is an example of pain. What was fascinating for me was a couple of years later, like 3-4 years later, I suddenly saw this guy stepping forward and speaking out against Donald Trump because this guy employs many Muslim people and he was very upset about the Muslim ban. And he employs very many women and he was upset about some of the behaviors of Donald Trump. And he finally started to speak out. And I said to my friend, you know, I'd really like to meet him again because I think he would be very different with me now than he would have been then. For that exact same reason. So I think that if you're committed to being liked by everybody, you have to repress something within you. I'm not committed to being liked by everybody. I am committed to serving. I don't have to be a hole in how I do it, but I have to be willing to stand up for what is the hill I'm willing to die on? What is the fire that I am willing to breathe? Because when I do that, I ignite the fire in others. And that's what I want to remind you of. A dragon leader lights the fire in others.
I think that that's probably a good place to just pause because everybody talks about leadership, right? And you know, sometimes it drives me crazy that there's so many different philosophies and models. And every day it seems like somebody's coming up with a new marketing slogan to talk about leadership. To me, And this is something that I'm now, many of you who follow me know that I talk about leaving your mark on the world. This happened to be a comment, something that my father said to me shortly before passing. And, you know, he said to me, you know, leave your mark on the world. And, you know, it's something that I didn't embrace until later in life. And now it's something I fully embrace. And to me, leaving your mark on the world is a call to action. It's an invitation to light your fire, to not play it safe, to not play it small. And so when I talk about, you know, leave your mark on the world, when I'm in content I write and stuff, it is a personal, deeply personal message and invitation for me as a reminder, but also an invitation to the people out there who are listening, who want more out of their life, right? We talk about all these things about happiness and joy and comfort and pain. At the end of the day, we have one spin, right? You know, on this earth, one time. This is about your legacy. How do you want to be remembered, right? How do you want to be remembered? And everything you do is going to leave a footprint, physical or digital. But I think it's really important that people remember that you are leaving your mark on this world. So how do you want to be remembered, right? Do you want to have that fire within? Do you want to be somebody who makes a difference in other people's lives or not? And that's okay. But just own your choice, own your story, own your life, right? I want to thank you, Dov, for a couple of things. First and foremost, for being my guest on the show. I mean, I think, you know, I hope people tuning in, first and foremost, really took away the value that I know that you brought. I still marvel at the fact that most people, I think they have an idea of who you are, but they fully haven't embraced who you are or what you're, who you can be for them. And that to me is kind of speaks volumes to what we're talking about today. You are a true dragon leader in my eyes. And I have the utmost respect and love for you as a friend, as a colleague, as a coach. I want to thank you so much for being on the show and dealing with the technical difficulties that seem to plague us from our first show to episode 10, where we cut out, there was no audio. We're back on again live. And you know what? It's so easy because after the first episode, I remember I was devastated and you told me, you said, listen, what are you going to do about this, Josh? Just right to the point. And I was beating myself up and you said, look, you either roll with it, make a video, embrace it, right? Find the joy in it or get over it and move on because it's done. So what are you going to choose? Mm-hmm. And you put me at choice.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you because had you not put me at choice on episode one, I would not be here with you on episode 10. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I you know, I love you. And for everybody who's tuning in, all of Dov's, you know, social handles are on here. You know him. If you don't, it's in the liner notes for the show. I want to thank you so much, Dov, for, you know, just taking the time and being such an incredible human being for me and for everybody else. You know, you are truly a unique individual. And I feel very honored to just know you. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me on. It's an honor to be here to serve. Thank you for your friendship, for your guidance, for your wisdom that you bring to everybody here. And I do want to say to everybody who's tuning in and listening, you know, Josh brings on great guests for you. Please make sure that you share this show with everybody you know. You know, he puts the time and the energy and the effort in. You have no idea how much this takes. I do because I have a podcast, two podcasts actually. It takes an enormous amount of work in the background that you never know about. So please write to Joshua. Let him know how much you appreciate this. Let him know what you got out of this episode. Let me know. You can write to me personally, dov@dovbaron.com, dov@dovbaron.com, and tell us. Let us know what you got out of this. If I can be of service to you, that's great. But please share this with everybody. Let Joshua know how much you appreciate the time, the energy, the effort he puts into bringing you good guests and really does his work and his research to make sure that he's fully prepared for this because this is not something that he casually does. Joshua doesn't casually do much. he is very committed and in serving you. So please recognize and honor that. I am honored to have been here. I'm honored to have served you, Joshua, and the audience. And if in any way I lit your fire and opened up the dragon within you, then I'm deeply grateful.
Thank you so much, Dov. For everyone else, thank you so much for tuning in and just kind of rolling with the punches. I'll see you next week. And most importantly, remember to leave your mark on the world. Take care and create a powerful day.